Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Mobilecast, coming to you live from Mobile World Congress 2016. I'm your host, Brian Katz, and I am so lucky to be sitting here with Rob Tiffany, the Global Technology Lead for Internet of Things, or IoT, at Microsoft. Rob, introduce yourself.
All right. It's great to be here. I work at Microsoft, and I'm aligned with our Azure IoT products, you know, so Azure IoT Suite and all the technologies that go in that, all the analytics, the outputs, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, but let's get a little history here, because, you know, you and I have known each other for a while, and, you know, you've been in mobile a long time. And, you know, that's really how we met. So, you know, this is the Mobilecast, and we talk about IoT and we talk about other stuff, but, you know, you're into mobile. Give us a little bit of your history around mobile.
Sure, certainly. I guess I jumped into mobile all in. You know, since I started my career kind of in the M2M and wireless space in the 90s and got into wireless programming, actually, worked with a lot, learned everything I knew from all these RF engineers and stuff like that. And then as the wireless business kind of grew, I stayed with that. And then, you know, in the late 90s, you know, you started seeing PDAs, you know, Palm Pilot was the big one. And so developing for the Palm.
The Palm Pilot, compact.
iPack.
Yep. I had a compact iPack. An HP iPack.
Absolutely.
And you got the modem sleeve.
Yes. I love the modem sleeve. That was awesome. Remember you could get CDPD on that sleeve? That, like, 19.2. It was like a miracle.
And then, you know, there was a new sleeve that you could put a compact flash card or whatever in. And back then it was like 16 or 32K, not even meg. So
it was great. It was good times. And so I think that really got me going into the mobile space is, a developer who'd been doing embedded and wireless programming. And so it was kind of a natural fit. And so it was exciting when the iPad came out. I think that was a big turning point for Microsoft, you know, because lots of people forget the battle back then was with Palm.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Long before anything else.
You think about it, you had Palm. Apple came out with their Newton, which to be ahead of its time by far, but failed spectacularly.
Right.
And I actually have one of those in my museum at home.
I'm jealous.
I have an Apple Newton in my, with the graffiti and everything else and drawing. But, you know, I had a Palm Pilot. I remember my mother got a Palm Pilot and had me hook it up to her machine and sync it up.
Wow.
And that was its own thing of, Mom, you have to plug it in every now and then. You have to actually sync it or else things don't work.
Do you remember there was this kind of web language called HDML, and then there was WML, and it was based on cards or something strange like that, the way you navigate?
I think it was cards. Yeah, that sounds familiar. I mean, I remember playing with them a little bit, and it was just one of those, okay, we've jumped the shark.
But people were saying, I'm a wireless mobile developer, and what they were really doing is building this weird WML thing. I forgot the company.
Well, remember, this was the age of, you know, then you moved into Windows Mobile.
Yeah.
And when did you join Microsoft?
So I joined in the end of 2004.
Okay, so the end of 2004, so which is really when Windows Mobile picked up, and Windows Mobile was the dominant operating system back then.
Yeah.
I had quite a few devices, but, you know, you had a device or a phone, you tended to work with a WAP gateway. I mean, who remembers those?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So, you know.
1.0, WAP. Yeah, that was such a big deal. You know what really got me going, and especially probably heading in the direction of Microsoft, was after doing all that stuff, you know how, you know, the whole invention, mother of necessity, whatever, all that kind of stuff. So I remember doing a pocket PC project. Remember the rugged devices?
Absolutely.
Intermec, Motorola, all those. All right, so I remember.
A lot of those are still around,
absolutely.
Amazingly.
That was kind of the entree for mobile for me, and I think it was for a lot of people. For an oil and gas company, I remember billing stuff that would work in the field. And so I'm using the original. It was after there was an embedded Visual Basic and embedded C++, and then Microsoft came out with the .NET Compact Framework, which made that development accessible to a lot of .NET developers. And so so I remember doing this big project for this oil and gas company, people in the field with these rugged devices, and you do that, and it was cool, and it was exciting, and then you have this epiphany, or something hits you. It happens about the time when they go, all right, this is great. We love it. Now we need to deploy it to 1,000 devices. And it hits you. You go, okay. So me and 1,000 of my best friends are going to get on a long conference room table and plug active sync cradles into laptops to move the software over onto these devices. And then it's like, there's got to be a better way. And, you know, that was the early days of device management. And really what it was really about was actually software distribution. It was like the low-hanging fruit. I need to find a way to get software out to a lot of devices over the air.
Absolutely. And if you remember back then, you know, the other big player, you had BlackBerry and you had Good.
Yes.
And, you know, Good was on Windows Mobile devices. Good was on Nokia Symbian devices. Yeah. And, you know, that was your competition. That was right. I mean, I had a Nokia E61.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I went through a bunch of things, you know, Samsung Blackjack, you name it. You know, stuff that you look at today and go, who in their right mind ever even thought of using this stuff?
Right.
And so it's pretty amazing, but I'm actually going to go back a little further because, you know, you and I know each other well enough. You're actually, I can call you a submariner.
Yes, I am. Absolutely. It's interesting to see that there's actually a submarine here at the show.
SK Telecom has a virtual submarine next door to the Samsung booth.
Yes.
In Hall 3, and you can take a virtual dive. But, you know, you worked on nuclear submarines.
I did. So in the early 90s, so during the Gulf War, I was on a SEAL team delivery vehicle. It's a special ops sub. Think of it as an old ballistic missile sub from the 60s where they took out all the ICBM tubes to have berthing room for the SEALs. And it was cool. On the flat missile deck, you had these mini subs. It was total James Bond kind of stuff. And so I did that. And actually, that's how I got to the Pacific Northwest, to Seattle. A lot of this other stuff may never happen.
And you actually, you know, I think a story you were telling me a couple of days ago, that's where you learned to program. You got bored and, you know, you figured I might as well learn to do something.
Absolutely.
In my time.
You know, I owe so much to being in the military. I taught myself how to program. I was really big into OS 2, actually, back then in the early days, like after Microsoft and IBM had their divorce. So OS 2.2.0, I was actually programming Rex and then did BASIC. Then, I learned DBASE, I guess, was my first database, and then Paradox. And then I think what really got me going.
And folks, he's not actually a developer anymore. He hasn't been for years.
Don't be. Oh, come on. I try to write code whenever I can, but not like I used to, no doubt about it. Visual Basic 3 was probably the big thing for me. And so literally, on the submarine, I'm writing, learning, teaching myself VB3, Access 1.1 back then, learning SQL.
It's amazing the number of programs that are still available in Access, are only available in Access. So,
you know, the 90s were an interesting time with all the, you know, you'd hear IT departments complaining about all these dang Access databases on NetWare file shares everywhere and non-programmers building apps for themselves. And it was interesting because a lot of people say, why did Microsoft succeed so well in the enterprise in the 90s? And lots of people go, oh, well, you know, Windows 3.1 was the big breakthrough and everything. But it was more than that.
It was access.
It was easy, non-programming needed tool where people could get stuff done. And, think about today. We talk about iTunes with Apple being tentacles that into people's lives. And we talk about switching costs. Someone may even want to move to an Android or a Windows phone, but they won't leave their iPhone because they got all their music in iTunes, and the switching, it's the hassle factor, whatever.
Look, lock-in's a big deal. And,
it
you
is.
Know, people may say that they're not playing that game, but they certainly are.
They do.
What feature can I give you that will keep you in, you know, in my ecosystem, using my device, whether your hardware, whether your software? So let's move up the timeline.
All right.
Let's release an iPhone.
Okay.
And, you know, let's start from there because you started to get really into mobility and, you know, take us away.
Right. So I joined Microsoft after I build and sell a device management company that I had to build out of necessity, sold it to another software company, which taught me a lot, you know, and joined Microsoft because I built the device management for Microsoft smartphone, as they called it. It was literally just called smartphone, and then Windows Mobile, and then some other platforms. So I joined Microsoft in mobile embedded devices in that time frame, and shortly after that, we launched Windows Mobile 5, and then I was there for Windows Mobile 6. 6.1 was an interesting release for us because that's when we launched our own device management product back then. And I remember Steve Ballmer was at CTIA in 2008, launched it.
Developers, developers, developers.
Yes. It was codenamed Yona. And we ended up calling it System Center Mobile Device Manager. And, you know, what's interesting is on paper, it would be still competitive today. It actually let you use Active Directory and group policy to manage phones. It let Windows Mobile phones join the domain and things that people associate with PCs. So it was really interesting.
Scary, but interesting.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know.
I actually remember that. Scary, but interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was a really complex system on-prem. You know, in the end, the product, we just folded it in to some other system center thing. It didn't take off like we wanted it to. I think it was too hard to set up. You know, it had a whole bunch of servers you had to build and all this kind of stuff to make it work. The idea was really cool, but, you know.
The implementation was not as pretty as the idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The brochure looked great, and the implementation was really hard to do. So
you released that.
Yeah. And so that was kind of...
And then, you know, iPhone comes out.
And the iPhone comes out, yeah.
And you guys start talking about Windows Mobile 6.5,
yep.
Which was renamed to 7.0, which was renamed back to 6.5, which never saw... Well, 6.5, I did see the light of day, right?
6.5, you know... Who knows how much trouble I'll get here, but, you know.
We won't tell anybody, just people who listen.
We were obviously working on stuff for a long time, the 7 release, that needed to be something that could compete with the iPhone. No doubt about it. New UI, you know, we called it Metro at the time. But, you know, timing's everything, and there's that holiday shopping release thing that still matters.
If it's not out by September, it's yeah. not. It doesn't count.
And so we knew that 7 was not going to be ready, but... The model for how Windows Mobile worked with the shell, the UI, you could plug in different UIs. And a lot of people don't realize Windows Mobile was based on something called Windows CE 5.0.
I remember. that's what all the embedded devices were built
yeah.
with.
So we built 6.5 to make sure we had something to ship for the holidays. That's really what it was. It had, you know, the big release was 6.1 with the MDM stuff built into it. 6.5 gave it a prettier face. Because we had a pluggable model. If you remember, HTC was the dominant Windows Mobile provider.
Yes, I do.
And they built their own UI. In fact, they wanted to change everything about Windows Mobile. In fact, sometimes they asked us, could you just give us the kernel and we'll build everything else? And so it was a very interesting time. So, you know, they built some really neat designs that ultimately ended up being in Android phones when HTC made the jump to Android. So we're moving.
So what you're trying to say is what could have been.
Yes, there's so many woulda, shoulda, couldas, aren't there? So we get Windows Phone 7 out the door with this Metro tile interface to a consumer-focused phone.
Which is quite honestly interesting because I remember looking at it. I remember actually, you know, I'll date myself and hopefully not get myself in trouble, but, you know, sitting down with a program manager for Windows Phone and being shown this and said, and being asked, can you deploy this in your enterprise? And looking at him going, but there's nothing for the enterprise here. We couldn't even connect it to an SSID in our organization. And there was no security at all. It was 100% consumer.
Yes.
Now, undeniably, I've always loved Windows Phone OS. I got to tell you that it was vastly different from Android. And if you look at it, Android has the same model as iOS. And people can ding me for that. But, you know, it's you got an icon on the screen.
Right.
You know, maybe you build a widget out of it. But Microsoft came up with a novel way. Tiles was very cool. You oversold it in 7.0. Yo, they were going to be live tiles. They were going to show you information and everything, and they didn't. You know, it was one of those. Well, that's the next version, and you know, but
Mango.
And you know, but it was one of those things of it was very cool. It was fun to play with. I have a Windows Phone 7.
Excellent.
I have a 7.5. I have an 8.
Yeah.
I have the whole kit and caboodle. But it was a, you know, when we looked at. There was no way for me to actually give it to anybody.
No.
Because I couldn't even put the most simple control. I couldn't even use Exchange ActiveSync on it to do stuff.
I think we only supported maybe 10 or 12 policies EAS policies in Phone 7. And we got a lot of heat from it. And so, you know, what you're saying now is taking me back. Sure. It's reminiscent. I do a lot of these executive briefings every week, and because all these executives fly into Redmond every week, and they get briefed for a couple of days on all our products. And I'd be one of the guys who talked about the phone. And so I remember the going from being that guy with Windows Mobile and having great conversations to Phone 7 talking to CIOs of enterprises, and they sounded just like what you're saying right now. I can't deploy this. There's no EAS. There's no encryption. There's no management. You know, I think it looks cool, but, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? And you had to get a thick skin real fast.
I have to tell you, my favorite line was, the program manager says, I understand we got a new version coming or anything else, and there's a salesperson sitting next to him who's sole goal is to get a pilot of a few phones. And no names. We're going to be nice. But he, I said, there's no encryption, no nothing. He goes, yeah, but nobody's cracked it yet. I said, you haven't shipped 100,000 phones yet. You've shipped like 2,000. You released this last week, and your whole thing is, well, I know it's not encrypted, but it hasn't been cracked yet.
It's pretty easy to say at that time.
Nobody has it. It's not a big deal. Right. And, it was just one of those things I looked at and I laughed. And, it was very funny because the program manager was very nice about it, fully understood.
Yeah.
He was in the same position you were. He'd obviously heard the complaints before. He understood it. But the good news is he took a lot of the stuff that we said we needed. I need to be able to work on, even when you did work with the complicated SIDS, then you didn't do... Is it WP2, whatever, one of the...
Totally. I remember all that.
You couldn't do one of the security protocols, were running on our... We could now connect it, but it wouldn't work because we couldn't do the encryption.
You know, the one interesting thing is, you're right, we had this simple phone. It could make calls. It had a browser. It had email. It looked cool. It didn't do as much as our previous phones. It wasn't enterprise ready. That drove a lot of interesting behaviors. It did one interesting thing, though. It set the stage for everything we would build since then. One of the big things, when we talk to customers, when you talk to anybody about going mobile, you and I have talked about the millions of Win32 apps that are still out there and getting those mobilized, imported, whatever. It's not just getting them onto mobile platforms. It's getting them onto modern platforms, because there's another difference, and it's called sandboxing. iOS has sandboxing, Windows Phone has sandbox, Android has it to some extent too, where you have a list of capabilities. I know a lot of users, when they download an app, maybe they just don't pay attention to, hey, I want this wallpaper to send all your data to another country or whatever, and they just say, okay. But it Windows Phone 7 was the first one where we had the notion of sandboxed apps. They couldn't talk to each other. They couldn't attack the platform. We built a store, and sure, obviously there's the app store and everything, but we were putting some smart things around security in place, even though probably to your, it didn't seem like we had security, that basically it was laying foundation.
You were laying a great foundation for some stuff, for what's out there now. You look at Windows 10, Windows Phone 10, you can see those foundations being laid.
Sure.
And it needed to happen. It was just an interesting time. So, an awkward light. Yeah, we're looking at each other. We're sitting across the table from each other. And it's just kind of funny because I lifted on one side. Rob obviously lifted on the other. And, we can just shake our head at it from the shared experience. But now let's move forward to a couple of years. Let's move to, around 2011, 2012, you were still mobile. You weren't doing IoT yet.
Right.
Let's start talking about apps. You mentioned Windows 32 app, Win32 apps.
Yeah.
And, one of the things we still see some people doing is, how do I move the program to, or the application to the mobile platform, versus how do I modernize the app or modernize the experience?
Yeah, good
and I
point.
Think that, I think back then it was, whether it's VDI or how do I move it versus modernizing. Why don't you take it away with that?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think a lot of people did the quick and easy, I need to just get this quickly, low-hanging fruit. And you're right, you saw a lot of people do VDI, path of least resistance, right? Obviously, that doesn't work out too well with the whole offline thing or whatever. But a lot of people did it. And then you're right, the people who were rewriting apps, a lot of times they just ported the same desktop app and put it on the phone. And
And you know, your finger is not that you don't have a mouse. It's still a finger. Yeah. You know,
right.
When there's no touch point, it's a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so nobody took advantage of the phone itself. They didn't. You're right. The UI. Remember all these apps in the 90s that looked like it was NASA Mission Control? People would like, I need you to buy bigger monitors because my app has 10,000 buttons and things on the screen all at once.
It was essentially, you know, if you remember the daisy wheel or the dot matrix printers put on a screen.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when those apps started to come to the phone, I remember developers going, I need to cram one more thing onto this screen. And you could tell people needed to unlearn a lot of bad behaviors. Or, you know, it wasn't necessarily bad. It's just what they did. They didn't know any better. And so...
Well, if you take a developer now, you know, the realization I've come to is if you take a developer who's been developing desktop apps and say, develop it for mobile, and you don't actually give them a phone.
Right.
And they haven't been using it. And if you think of, you know, if you look at a lot of the big companies, phones and tablets weren't widely deployed in, you know...
Right.
2010, 2011, 2012. And what did they do?
Yeah.
Well, I can make this fit a smaller screen.
It was just about a screen size, wasn't it?
You know, and if you were, you know, they had an emulator that they used on their computer,
yeah.
And then they handed it out.
Right.
And then nobody used it.
Absolutely. So learning new UI paradigms, learning maybe to be more minimalistic, instead of crowding everything, you know, start, you know what? Learn to waste space. I'd prefer you to have more screens with fewer things on it. And make the things bigger. Make UI elements bigger. Make the fonts bigger so we can see them. And a lot of those things seem counterintuitive to developers because they're like, well, wait, I already got this tiny screen. I'm up against it here. How am I going to fit all this stuff? It's like, you're not. Don't try to. Because people want to be able to ultimately use their fingers. You're right. That those early days where we went to the stylus, you know, I was part of a bunch of people who built, well, I think we had maybe 20,000 apps in the Windows Mobile days prior to the iPhone being launched.
I remember the Handspring store. And
yeah, absolutely. But they were all, and we followed the same mouse paradigm from the desktop to Windows Mobile with a stylus. The idea of a precision pointing device that could click on something small. And so we were able to
On a capacitive touch screen that could only take one touch point anyway.
Yeah, and so we kind of got away with it, not very well. But you're right. Now we've got, you know, multi-touch devices. So we needed to unlearn bad behaviors and learn new UI things. We tried to do that at Microsoft. I remember having this thing called the Book of Metro, actually, that I got when we launched Phone 7. And I know we don't call it Metro anymore because there's actually a company called that in Germany. And so we started calling
I remember that lawsuit in that fight.
There was like modern apps. But the idea was content over Chrome, fewer things, more minimalistic, simpler things. It almost made me think of furniture with Bauhaus style, you know. And you kind of see that on the iPhone too. Very simple, clean lines.
It's about clean lines, but it's also about focus. You know, the people who build apps well realize it's you can multitask, but you don't necessarily multitask the way you do in a desktop environment where you give all those choices.
You're absolutely right.
So you got into Windows Phone 7, you got to Windows 8, but you actually kind of moved into strategy there
at
Microsoft.
Well, because I, you know, in addition to developing and then architecting, I was also the sync guy. I like wrote all these books on, we had this technology with SQL Server called merge replication. This was part of the success of actually Windows Mobile. We had a little database on every phone called SQL CE, SQL Server Compact,
Compact Edition.
Yeah, and the .NET Compact Framework would work with it, and it was familiar to people who knew ADO and stuff like that. And we had this out-of-the-box sync technology that would sync databases and tables and do change tracking with SQL Server. That was wildly popular. In fact, I would talk to customers, the biggest companies you can think of all over the globe, and I'm routinely surprised they all deployed it. And it was because it was so simple. It was easy. Lots of companies had SQL servers. They needed to get that data out to devices. Rather than build 300 web services to do that, they just had you just push a button and it said sync, and it was a black box, and it did it for you. It was funny, as I moved ahead in the later days of Windows Phone, we didn't have the database anymore. We didn't have encryption. As a developer, it actually drove me. I created my own NoSQL embedded database to make up the slack there. I worked with banks. It's funny. While we didn't have encryption built into Phone 7, crypto APIs in .NET existed.
Absolutely. I actually know some who wrote programs that utilize that to encrypt the app in their sandbox.
Absolutely. And so that's exactly what I did. And I taught people how to do AES 256 encryption for their app's data at rest to at least protect that, you know, because I couldn't count on the rest of the phone, right? But yes, so moving along, doing more development, doing big systems, doing architecture, and then I started spending more and more time doing strategy. And just spending more of my time talking to executives, going out on site with lots of the biggest companies you can imagine, camped out with them for however many weeks, and helping them plan out their end-to-end strategy for mobile, like everything. And it's because, you know, it wasn't like I was some rocket science. I'd just been doing it for so long, like you. We'd just been in the business, and we'd seen every... You know how you learn, I've made 10,000 mistakes, and that's why you're talking to me now.
It's the 10,000 mistakes that lead to the, you know, the two tidbits of knowledge that you have.
Right, absolutely.
And everybody thinks you're really wise. You don't realize all the problems I've caused and had to fix myself.
Absolutely.
Wait, you know, and you know, we'll get more into this, but this actually led to you writing a book. You did a, I guess it was about a year ago. You did a tweet storm of, you know, 50 yeah. or 50 plus tweets.
Right.
And I remember the time when you did it. And I was like, what? Because it wasn't during the day. I think it was actually, it started at night, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Somebody can't sleep. That was how I first approached it. Somebody's a little, you know, they got insomnia here because, you know, and you yeah. know, you're on the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast, so it's a different hour. But talk a little bit about the book.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it started as a tweet storm. I was, you know, I guess I was inspired by, you know, Mark Andreessen had done tweet storm, Steve Sanofsky. And so I was thinking about I'd written all these mobile books, and I was thinking of all these concepts, kind of blocking and tackling. Not all of them are rocket science things, but they were like, here are the nuts and bolts to transform your enterprise, soup to nuts, whether it's EMM, apps, security, infrastructure, boosting your infrastructure, finding out that most of these companies, their infrastructure was wholly unprepared for mobile, the onslaught.
Here are some of the mistakes I made and how not to make them yourself.
Absolutely. You know,
in 140 characters or less.
Right. And so somehow I cranked out 50 or 60 tweets and kind of followed the little tweet storm, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, that kind of thing, and blasted them out there. And yeah, it was kind of weird and had people going, wow, what is this? Well, you know, some people are like, oh, this is great stuff. Well, then after that, I had a conference I had to do a keynote for on mobile enterprise stuff for a few hundred executives. And it was coming up in April of last year in Chicago. And I'm like, what in the world am I going to talk about? And I remembered this tweet storm. And so I was like, what if I took each tweet and put them onto PowerPoint slides?
So the truth of the matter is, you had to give a presentation. You had no freaking clue what to give. And said, wait a second. I've already done this. I just have to pick funny pictures.
Yes.
And I know there were funny pictures in that slide deck.
Absolutely.
I've seen some of those slides.
Absolutely. So basically, you can imagine copying and pasting 50 tweets into 50 slides in a PowerPoint deck. And so I just gave the presentation. I made each slide kind of have some of the UI elements you see in Twitter, the retweets, yep. my picture, and all that stuff to make it look like you're actually looking at Twitter. And the thinking was, I'll have the slide with a tweet, and I'll give you a little color commentary about that, and then we'll move on. And we'll have to go pretty fast because, you know, 50 tweets, that's a lot of slides, and I don't like to do a big deck like that. And so it's going to be like, you know... And my thinking was this.
See, I'm exactly the opposite. I like to do a 60 or 70 slide deck in like 20 minutes. So I'm doing 3 or 4 slides a minute. Yeah, because 3/4 of them are pictures.
Sure.
Because the point here is to get people's attention and get a point across.
You're absolutely right.
It's not
right.
necessarily to put a ton of words on a slide.
You're absolutely right. So I did that. I'm running through, and I'm telling all these CEOs and CIOs in the room, I was like, you know what? This is your executive checklist. This is what I want you to do this year. And I just started going through it. And before I knew it, I'm seeing guys writing stuff down in the audience, you know. And you never know how...
You're going, wasn't I drunk when I wrote half of these?
Yeah.
What are they writing down?
I don't even know what I was saying. I was bleary-eyed. Yeah. And so I'm writing... And so I go through this, and then it's over. And, you know, we have all done lots of presentations at lots of conferences. But I was overwhelmed at the response because, again, I thought a lot of them were just pretty basic things. Do this, do this, do this. But I find out when you go around the world, you find out a lot of things we assumed had already happened in the enterprise around mobility, it turns out it hadn't happened at all yet. The adoption has been slower than we thought. Early adopter CIOs who talk a good game, turns out they haven't done anything.
There's a difference between talking and, you know, I guess the way I like to look at it is I talk about the same maturity model that we talk about with a bunch of other things applies to mobile. And there are a lot of companies out there who talk like they're level five, but truly all they've done is given out devices or opened up email, ActiveSync.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, ActiveSync was maybe still is, the largest way that phones are managed.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, they're not truly managed.
Yeah.
They're running ActiveSync.
It was better than nothing.
And if somebody knows how to go into the Exchange server and wipe a device, more power to them.
Right.
Most people still don't.
Right, right. No, it's a good point.
So this led to your book called Mobile Strategies for Business.
Absolutely. So after I did that session, the rest of that day, I'm at this event. That day and the next day, I had about 75 executives say, this is one of the best sessions I've ever heard. This is going to transform my business. And I kept going, are you sure? Really? Okay. You know, it was kind of a weird ego, weird feeling. But it happened so much that I go, yeah, maybe there's something here. And so maybe I should turn it into a book. And so in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'll make the book just like this deck. When you open the book up, you'll see the left-hand page is the tweet, and the right's going to be my commentary on that tweet. And so I'm like, and I'm also figuring I could probably write this book pretty fast, too. You know, I'm not writing a 700-page tome on something. And so that was the thinking. And so I blasted through it and started off just getting the tweets down and then just digging in on the commentary of each tweet and going through it. And then have lots of great mobile friends all over the world who have so many great ideas and have been super helpful. So the book came out.
You were kind enough to send me a preview copy. Excellent work.
I appreciate it.
And I got my signed copy yesterday. So I can say I have a Rob Tiffany signed work.
But in the end, all it really is, it's an executive checklist for a technical executive, a CIO, who, now that I know a whole lot of them haven't done what I thought they have. I'm at that same event I was speaking at, a guy after me was from IDC, and he goes, well, as it turns out, the average company has only built like two or three apps, and we're how many years into this enterprise mobility wave? And I'm like, really? Are you, you know, so you know how sometimes you think
the average is up to, I think, of the ones that have built apps now, the average number of apps, I think, is six.
Okay. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, absolutely.
So many big companies have literally thousands. Some even have tens of thousands of Win32 apps they built in the 90s.
But the problem is those people are gone. They don't even know how to deconstruct those apps.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's much easier to use them the way they are and leave them alone. And yet there aren't greenfields. We were talking about this the other day, that those don't exist. But that's led you to IoT for Microsoft.
Yeah,
so how do you make that change? And I'm asking it to you that way just for the fact that when you walked in, remember, we're at Mobile World Congress. Rob took a walk around the floor, and I've taken a similar walk around the floor, and there's maybe 10% of the booths here don't have the word IoT somewhere on the booth. So, and you and I had this discussion back in, you know, I was out in Seattle last summer. He said, it's amazing how many companies are now doing IoT that all they know is the word IoT.
Yeah.
So, explain how you got into it. Explain what you're actually doing at Microsoft with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully I have a little street cred since I started.
Nah, just the mobile.
Yeah, you're right. But I did M2M before mobile. And as you and I have discussed, there's this peculiar, a strange affinity between EMM, elements of EMM, MDM, and what IoT is. IoT is a bunch of devices, sensors, actuators, that they've got some kind of app, some SDK, something that's capturing the state, the relevant information that we care about from that device, and they need to send it back somewhere for analysis and to do something about it. And so I instantly thought, when I built a device management company, as a developer, the first thing I did was I had to build an agent. This was pre-OMADM, and so I had to build an agent in C. I had to write to the native APIs of the platform because there was no easy thing to do like we have today. And then I had to send it back, and I was just using, you know, HTTP REST type stuff. But I remember sticking around with all the MTM guys in the industrial world. Those guys have been doing this for decades. And they use things like called MQTT and AMQP, all these wire protocols that are super efficient.
I remember all those. And,
yeah.
And they're still used today.
Absolutely. Well, they're more efficient than just sending HTTP REST, you know, or SOAP for sure. And they're full duplex. They're tiny. They can the libraries can run in really tiny devices because a lot of these sensors, you know, have very little RAM. You know, I know we always used to complain about mobile phones being resource constrained. You ain't seen nothing.
And you have to realize that when we're talking about sensors, if each person has maybe two or three devices, you have a limit. And that's not worldwide, but if you look at it that way, you have a limit of 18 billion devices at the moment.
It's crazy.
You start looking at, you can have something that's got 100 sensors on it, and yeah. That's just a thing.
Yeah.
Take a look at a jet engine, take a look at a car, take a look at all these other things. So it makes sense what you're saying, where you take some of those, how do I manage all those things as one thing,
yeah.
or as a few things versus a million or a billion things.
So all these analysts, they're out there throwing darts at a board saying 20 billion, 50 billion devices connected. How do we wrap your mind around that? It's huge, the, you know, being able to work with that many devices. Think about what the effect of BYOD has been on stressing the infrastructure of an enterprise. The network, the needing more access points, needing more DNS servers, needing more exchange servers, needing more of everything because the load, because now people have like three or four or five devices all pounding on that infrastructure. It's been huge. And, you know, and I tried to talk about that in my book. Imagine what IoT is going to do to these same enterprises, because now it's been something that's been in discrete manufacturing, a lot of factory floor stuff, but now it's going to break out. We're seeing it all over consumer world, obviously, and it's going to be all over the enterprise. And every company is going to have to up-level their game yet again. And we're still talking about the guys who haven't gotten their act together around mobile yet. They need to do double duty and up their game for BYOD and this onslaught from having millions of devices sending telemetry.
In some ways, I actually think it's easier to do IoT because in most cases, each sensor only does one thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's what you do with that data, how you collect that data, how you put stuff back down. You know, yesterday, Rob and I sat on a panel together here at Mobile World Congress, and we were talking about IoT gateways, and sometimes you need local logic versus going back to the mothership to figure out what to do. And, you know, machine learning fits into all this, and you basically own all of this for Microsoft.
Yeah. It's really interesting. We build all this stuff. It might sound strange to you because I know you're thinking, of course you built all this stuff. You built streaming analytics. You built machine learning. But I have to tell you, I'm not seeing a lot of original engineering around the space. And not just from startups or smaller companies, but from the very biggest companies who are doing IoT, who are talking a good game. If you pull up back their covers on most of these companies, they're raiding the Apache cookie jar. They are downloading Kafka for telemetry ingestion. They're probably using Cassandra to store data in a database for time series.
Why you use what you know.
I
was going to say, why build something new? But in reality, you use what you know.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's one of those things that when you look at, if we go back to mobile for a second, look at developers, they're catering to .NET.
Yeah.
Why? Because there are a ton of .NET developers
sure.
out there.
Sure.
And so the same thing, I think, happens in IoT.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There are some great tools. And so I go, wow, well, at Microsoft, we actually know how to invent this stuff, and we have that kind of engineering tech prowess. And I'm seeing all these other people just downloading whatever, Spark, Storm, Apache, you know, to do machine learning, to do streaming. Now, on the other hand, though, to your point, there's the familiarity part. There's also, hey, I need to get to market quickly with this solution because there's this gold rush happening around IoT. And what's the fastest way for me to do it? I'm going to download this free stuff and put some kind of web veneer over the top of it and create the illusion that I built this or whatever. So I'm seeing a lot of that happening. We try to do what we often do at Microsoft, make some really hard stuff really easy to use. With our event processing tool, Stream Analytics, that actually dates back to SQL Server Stream Insight. When I talk to folks who don't understand what stream processing is, I go, hey, you know databases, right? I insert data into a table. You query it with SQL to find out something that adds value to your business. So now imagine with streaming analytics, I'm querying with SQL stuff that's in flight in memory. And it
you're just querying the stuff that's going.
Yeah, absolutely. I go, it's the same thing. It's just in flight. And so this is all happening in real time. And they go, oh, okay, I get that. And then there's the batch side of it, which people usually think of Hadoop and Storm and Spark and those things. And I go, machine learning is like that. Our machine learning, it's more of a batch thing. And you create models for the perfect state of a particular machine or whatever it is, you know, whatever you're looking for. And then that telemetry is coming in, and it can notice the change and the degradation, and it's a scoring engine. It's predictions. It's giving you predictions. It's going to say, hey, there's a 79% chance that your brake pads are going to go out next week. You should probably do something about it, you know, something like that, or your elevator is going to fail.
Which is what's really cool about it. And you know what? I'm going to say that what we'll probably do is put you back on the show in a few months, and we'll just talk IoT.
That sounds good.
Because I think that we could spend a whole show on it. But we do need to wrap up. So
Absolutely. Any
last thoughts on mobile business strategies, you know,
being
that's your book, anything you want to leave people with?
I'll say something really self-serving, like go get my book and go transform your business. There are too many businesses who haven't done it yet. And now you don't need to just do it for mobile. You actually need to do it for IoT as well, infrastructure-wise. Also, mobilizing all those apps from the 90s, it's not just about making them mobile. It's also a security thing. There was no security in the 90s for those apps. All that stuff was wide open, Win32. You can see and do anything you want.
Because they were local.
Yeah. We didn't have the internet for a lot of that time. So it's like, I need companies to do this to secure their enterprise. They are putting themselves at risk. When you look at all the hack attacks, I've read stats that say upwards over 90% of the reason things get hacked is out-of-date software, unpatched software.
Because it was there.
It was there.
It was there, and it was open, and it was easy to do.
Absolutely.
So let me give you a plug. It's Mobile Strategies for Business by Rob Tiffany. It's available on Amazon. Rob will give me a link. I'll put it in the podcast. So this won't be released during MWC, but it'll be probably released next week. So the week after MWC, but Rob will give me a link. I'll put it at the end of the podcast. Rob, I want to thank you for coming on.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, thanks for enjoying a great episode, and we'll talk to you soon.